Ladies and gentlemen, a good morning to you. This is John Cameron Swayze in the NBC Newsroom in New York. Today we'll have direct reports from world capitals, from our own, from Paris, where there is continued communist trouble, from London, a summary of the top headlines, and a story from Berlin. There's news to be reported from this point, news of the prices we pay for essentials, of a probable new demand that they come down. But before we get into that, here for a moment is your announcer.
While the approach of winter heralds a worse food crisis than ever for Europe, thanks to nature's toll of basic food crops last year, we Americans are eating better than ever before. You and I have yet to experience what has become an everyday occurrence for men, women, and children in France, Italy, Holland, and other Western European countries. Namely, the feeling of being hungry all the time, tired all the time, because you don't get enough to eat. Unless we go all out to share our food with Europe this winter, actual starvation of thousands may be the consequence, and with it, riot, revolution, and destruction of such free governments as still remain intact on the continent. That's why the Citizens Food Committee is asking you and me to conserve grain, meat, and poultry products. Remember, save wheat, save meat, save the peace. Now, back to the NBC Newsroom.
Those who profess to know say that President Truman, in his message to the special session of Congress on Monday, may seek authority to help other nations fight inflation and at the same time make a suggestion for halting the rising cost of living at home. According to government figures, that cost, as you may have noticed, has taken another rise on the wholesale level, those prices in the last few days having gone almost as high as during the post-war peak set in September. And in Chicago, all livestock price records for prime beef have been broken. A carload of steers sold for $38 a hundredweight, or if you like, 38 cents a pound. Previous high was set last October at 37. Incidentally, grains dropped yesterday as some needed rain fell in the Southwest. In all probability, Congress is going to be called on by one large labor group to take action to force prices down. That's one of the results expected from the overwhelming sweep of the forces of Walter Reuther at the convention of the United Auto Workers, which adjourned last night at Atlantic City. The Reuther faction won 18 of the 22 posts on the executive board. The union is not expected to ask for more wages now, but to demand Congress do something about the high cost of living. In Schenectady, New York last night, Henry Ford II said he personally did not know how prices could be lowered by a general 12% reduction, the figure UAW President Reuther has mentioned. Incidentally, Ford also estimated it would be about 2 years before you and I can walk into an automobile showroom, buy and get delivery of a new car on the spot, as was the practice in pre-war years. Getting back to the high cost of daily essentials, there is also on the record today the plan to cut taxes on low incomes, stretch the work week into more hours, and perhaps restore some controls. This has been put before the Republican leadership, but the GOP bigwigs haven't announced whether they'll sponsor it. As Republicans make it clear that aid to Europe will have top priority with them, as with the Democrats when Congress meets Monday, Harold Stassen has had something to say about foreign policy. He has called for an embargo on shipment of any hard tools and electrical equipment to Russia until a definite agreement has been reached with the Soviet on the rebuilding of Europe. He went on to attack what he said was the secrecy that surrounded too many negotiations and dealings with Russia. Meanwhile, the friendship train is 104 cars long, rolling eastward in two sections with its food for Europe. Along this line, another item about the town of Dunkirk, New York, 20,000 population. On Thanksgiving Day, the Italian ambassador will head a party accepting a big donation of essentials, clothing, food, medical supplies, all contributed by the people of the Dunkirk vicinity for ex-enemies, the people of Anzio, beachhead of the Allied invasion of Italy. Essentials given, as the Dunkirk folk put it, to establish a beachhead of peace, where the city's own sons once took part in establishing a beachhead for invasion. Overseas, NBC monitors have heard a report that police have arrested 82 persons and are holding 1,000 for investigation in the communist outbreaks in Marseille. In Italy, there has been more of the same kind of political violence overnight, large-scale communist-inspired public disorders. In Palestine, the 3-day casualty toll in the violence between the Jewish underground and the British troops stands at 16 killed and 32 wounded. And NBC monitors have just heard that 3 ships... reported to carry 11,000 Jewish immigrants, are reported nearing the Palestine coast. Now for our morning global tour to get direct reports. Let's hear about that French situation from NBC in Paris.
Events in France and Italy today can be drawn in parallel with the Italians a few jumps ahead of the French. Threats of civil war have been hurled across the floor of the Italian Parliament. In Paris, we haven't reached that point yet, but the communists in the assembly use every opportunity to scream maledictions on their opponents, and the break between their party and the rest of the French is widening from day to day. Throughout Italy, street fights, looting, and the plundering of political party offices continue, with a new flare-up in Sicily this morning. Italian leftists now demand that the government dissolve neo-fascist organizations and that it prevent the publication of rightist newspapers. In France, the situation is tense. The government is uncertain of carrying on much longer, since political circles agree that it must be strengthened to include not only the center but some rightist groups. Premier Ramadi is giving a dinner to group leaders tonight, and important decisions are expected on that score. Even now, the cabinet is taking action as a result of riots in Marseille last Wednesday. Two companies of Republican security guards were dissolved by official decree this morning. Officers and men are discharged without pension because their attitude during the riots was one of sympathy for the mob. Several state functionaries in Marseille have been suspended for the same reason. And today, a mass roundup of doubtful characters is going on in the Mediterranean port, and a number of foreigners have been corralled and will be expelled from the country. But even ill winds can bring some good sometimes. Kids in France are tickled pink this morning. There'll be a teacher strike next Friday, and that spells no school. This is Paul Archinard in Paris.
For a general roundup of the top news in England, we switch to NBC in London.
A third leader of the Polish Peasant Party is due in London today after escaping from his homeland via the underground of Sweden and reaching Scotland by airliner last night. This is Mr. K. Korbonski, an aide to Mr. Mikulajczyk, who reported to his chief by telephone. But the main news from London today remains the political and economic crises, with accents on the resignation of Hugh Dalton as Chancellor of the Exchequer and the increased incentives to British coal miners on whom Britain's salvation depends. There are whispering campaigns in all but the Labour Party today that the scandal of Hugh Dalton's budget indiscretion may force a national coalition government in the very near future. This is based on two rather weak supporting arguments. First, that of all the people concerned in this matter, the Prime Minister fares the worst. His political opponents and some of his supporters say Mr. Attlee should have stepped out in front of Mr. Dalton and handled the issue more delicately. Secondly, that the people and many Labour supporters will disagree with the amassing of all economic power in the hands of one man and the key powers of government in the hands now of three big leaders, Attlee, Bevan, and Cripps. Certainly Cripps' appointment to the chancellorship has affected downward the stock market quotations of government securities. But on one point the nation is united. That is sympathy for Mr. Dalton. The Conservative Party, even though pressing for further investigations, agrees with this. On the economic crisis, the nation today supports the announced pay increases for coal miners, averaging $3 per week, lifting their base pay to approximately $26 per 44-hour week underground. This is Merrill Muller in London.
In this country, and time now to have details of the most interesting news in Washington. Let's hear from NBC in the nation's capital.
This morning, Homer Ferguson is happily lugging a secret fuel into the committee room where he has General Benny Myers in the frying pan. And he says, we haven't even lit the fire under him yet. Senator Ferguson's secret fuel is one of two witnesses to take the stand this morning to tell what he knows about the general's alleged stock and bond deals, attempted borrowing, job hunting, and recommending friendly companies for war contracts while he was Uncle Sam's number two plane buyer during the war. Senator Ferguson won't name the witness. The other witness is a former Howard Hughes lawyer, Neil McCarthy, who will fill in his previous story about Myers' wartime try at a big loan and a job at a time when a Hughes contract was up for consideration. To add to Benny's woes, the Justice Department now says it's looking into the general's affairs. He says he's willing to give the facts either in the open or behind closed doors. Neither the Army nor the Air Force will listen to the general's offer to stand court-martial. The Air Force says he retired from the Army. The Army says an officer can't request court-martial trial, only an inquiry. Air Force headquarters, which is bright and cheery whenever the Navy or the Army is in the pan, is filled with gloom so thick you could cut it with a dull hatchet. But Army and Navy officers are whistling happy little tunes. Otherwise, this morning, we hear that the President, when he goes before Congress Monday, will ask for wider allocation powers and restored controls over installment buying. This morning, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says this year will be the best home building year since 1925. This is Leif Eed in Washington.
There is yet another overseas point scheduled for this morning. A report from NBC in Berlin.
One estimate here in Berlin is that since this city was occupied over 2 years ago, over 5,000 persons have disappeared. Where they go, no one knows for sure. They simply vanish, and the distraught families of these people hear nothing. About 2 weeks ago, a prominent German journalist, a man by the name of Frieda, working for an American licensed newspaper, turned up in the missing column. According to this story, there was a telephone call, usual in these disappearing cases, and he was enticed over to the Russian sector of Berlin on the story that a friend had had an accident. The disappearance of this man because of his prominence has created something of a stir in Berlin. We have asked the Russians to investigate, and the city parliament, declaring that these disappearing acts are even worse now than under Hitler, passed a vote of no confidence in the Berlin chief of police, whose name is Margraf, the man whose job it is to protect the people. Now, Margraf is in effect telling the city parliament to go jump in a lake. They can't do anything to me anyway, he says, and that's true, because it requires unanimous agreement of the four powers to oust an official, and Margraf is Moscow trained. And this is just another example of how the Russians have been perpetuating the terms of office of officials they appointed even before the other allies arrived, and in many cases despite the expressed wishes of the people. It's a swell state of affairs. Meanwhile, beginning today, there's a campaign to rid Berlin of rats. Berlin officials say there's one rat in the city for every individual. This is Ed Hawker in Berlin.
In Cleveland, the Young Democratic Clubs of America have wound up their convention on an optimistic note for the party in next year's election. The note was provided by predictions and tub-thumping of Democratic leaders present. The Navy's Admiral Blandy, who commands the Atlantic Fleet, tells us the Navy's Bureau of Ships is working steadily on problems of using atomic power to propel vessels through the water, thereby giving us a hint of things to come. Damage estimated at $500,000 was caused by the tornado that struck the Louisiana town of DeRidder yesterday, injured 15 persons, demolished more than 100 homes, and damaged a number of buildings. A top real estate man and official of the National Association of Real Estate Boards, Herbert V. Nelson of Chicago, has stuck his neck way out and said the housing situation is improving, except in the far west. He said for rent signs are appearing in southern states especially. We'll have more news in a moment, but now your announcer.
This month marks the annual drive to enroll more than 19 million school children and young people into the American Junior Red Cross, largest youth organization in the world. Founded during World War I by President Wilson as a means of helping the war effort, the activities of the Junior Red Cross are today international in scope. Boys and girls in this country help prepare gift boxes of toys and useful items for children living in the war-devastated areas of Europe, and they carry on correspondence and exchange of souvenirs with children overseas. Here at home, members of the Junior Red Cross help out in safety education and recreation programs, as well as in providing valuable services to wounded veterans, the aged, and the handicapped. Because the Junior Red Cross gives young people such a real chance to serve others, both here and abroad, we urge those of you who have boys and girls in school to see that they enroll in this great organization. Full information can be had from the teachers or principal of your local high school. And now, again, back to the newsroom.
This being Saturday and the football season having progressed as far as it has, let's devote a moment to noting that the matter of a bid to the Rose Bowl hangs in the balance in the Michigan-Wisconsin game, just as does the Big Nine championship. Here's the setup to keep in mind as you listen to Bill Stern describe the battle this afternoon. Michigan can clinch both by winning. Wisconsin must beat both Michigan and then Minnesota to get title and bowl bid. A reminder, your Christmas packages for Army personnel overseas should definitely be sent today. And now for your consideration and sympathy, the case of Virgil Goodman of Bangor, Maine, who parked his car and was about to drop a nickel in the parking meter when the wind blew his hat off. He chased it half a block, returned to insert the nickel, and found a traffic ticket stuck in his windshield. That's the story, folks. This is John Cameron Swayze saying goodbye from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.